A Liverpool legend, a journalist, a musician and an author, all passionate Reds, and their special guests. You're listening to Hotel Tia podcast, a little LFC boutique hotel in 21 Anfield Road. Enjoy yourself. Welcome back to Hotel Tia's podcast. It's a beautiful day to talk about football. We never mind the rain, don't mind it singing on our roof. If you hear some strange sound, it's just the sound of Liverpool really in the northwest. We love it anyway. Around the table we have a mighty fine four-leaf clover, I must say. To my left, it's the one and only super sub. David Fairclough, do you ever get sick of that super sub title?
I would have done years ago, a long time ago probably, but in these days, you know, I've said before, you know, we have such a magnificent history. So my own little piece of it is great, and the fact that people remember me as super sub, well, that'll do for me.
I'm thinking now you've got a modern version of yourself, Origi. He's become the new David Fairclough. Have you thought of that? You guys should meet up and discuss the magic of coming on, scoring those vital goals when everybody expects you to.
Well, he's had a little bit of good fortune in the last 12 months and very grateful to see it. He's achieved something that I didn't do, scoring in a Champions League final, which, that takes... That's a great achievement. So he's enjoying his moments, I'm sure. He would like a few more of them. I think he'd like to be playing on a more regular basis if the truth was known. But for the moment, yeah, you have to make the most of the opportunities that you get. And certainly the impact he made last season was tremendous, yeah. He's getting a little bit of a reputation.
If he keeps on being the super sub like you were, maybe we should suggest at some point to get like a duo in bronze with the two of you in front of Anfield. You know, you can't underestimate a super sub, can you? I mean, it's vital to have one of those in the team.
Well, in this day and age, obviously, your substitute bench is as crucial as your first 11. In the old days, because there was only one substitute allowed, the substitute was basically like a spare wheel in your car. You don't think about it until you need it. But now managers are judged on how they use their substitutions, and they're criticised and they're taken to task over how they use substitutions. And it's useful if you've got one that can actually come on and make an actual impact. And it's strange you say about the super sub tag. It was probably hadn't really ever been mentioned until I kind of came around, but now it's regularly used in match commentaries, match reports, and things like that. It's been intriguing to see how it's all evolved.
Well, to put it this way, David, in the Hotel Tia podcast, you're not the super sub. You are the starting four. So there you go. You're very welcome. And then next to you, we have James Pearce, who is working for The Athletic. How are you doing today, James?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Not bad at all. And next to you, we have the mighty fine Jamie Webster. How are you today, Jamie?
I'm great. How are you? All good?
Not bad. Have you had any guitar playing this morning? Do you start off the day with playing a bit? Or?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. I've got a studio space in town now, which I use, obviously, because I do my own music as well as the Liverpool songs. So it works out quite well, actually, because my girlfriend lives in, she lives by town, but she works right in the centre of the town, so I drop her off at about 8:15 in the morning, and then by 8:30 I'm in my music room, playing my guitar and trying to write something new all the time. So yeah, I've played a lot of guitar today already, and yeah, love it though. It's nice to be able to not be an electrician anymore for the time being.
So you've quit completely now?
Yeah.
It's all about music now?
Yeah, definitely.
How does that feel?
Unbelievable, obviously. It was when I realised I wasn't good enough to play football for a living when I was about 14, 15. I got into music massively, and I always just thought to myself, you know, how good would it be to, if your job was to sit and write songs all day? And, you know, thankfully that with the deal I've signed, that is my job for at least probably the next 4 years at least. It's brilliant to be able to do it. Obviously, it's like a passion. It's like for you, David, you know, to get up and play football every day for a living. You know, you can't really beat it. I feel lucky, but also not like it hasn't been coming my way, because I've worked hard over the past 8 years, going, you know, working 5 days a week and then Friday night taking your tools out of your car, putting your speakers in the car, going to a pub to play to sometimes not many people at all for not much money at all, and then, you know, the next morning you were putting your tools back in your car to go and work on a Saturday for yourself, and then again Saturday night you were changing over again. So it's a lot nicer now that I can sort of plan my life a little bit better and plan all my musical events, and obviously I'm getting to see a lot of the world and travel and play to lots of different Liverpool fans all over the world, which is, it's a privilege and a pleasure.
And you, James, you've done a big change as well. So you are also focusing now more on every piece you write. Tell us about your transmission into The Athletics, and what is The Athletics?
So The Athletic is a subscription website / app that was launched in America about 3.5 years ago in Chicago, and the idea being that a lot of media websites obviously are focused on all about web hits and getting as much traffic as possible, and with that business model obviously there's a lot of adverts and pop-ups and surveys that anyone who will have tried to read stuff on sites like that will know all about. And so this is, you know, the attraction for me was when they approached me back in about a week before the Champions League finals, you know, would you come and cover for Liverpool for us? But, you know, when I taught them through my normal day at the Echo, which would be kind of filling 5 or 6 different web spikes and doing podcasts and videos pretty much with every video, with almost every story. And to be honest, obviously at the Echo, you know, nothing was kind of too small to do a story on, really, in terms of Liverpool related. It was all about, you know, what was, you know, and you never really got to spend more than an hour or two on anything, because it was always, well, what's next? What have you got for the next web spike in 2-3 hours time? We need 2 or 3 pieces to start tomorrow morning off with. So this is a very different approach. This is no adverts, no pop-ups, no surveys. People have to pay a subscription via theathletic.com, which is available for about £2.50 a month if you sign up for a year at the moment. And the idea being that it's a much kind of more kind of reader-friendly experience without any ads, and it's more in-depth. So that was one of the main attractions for me, being able to, you know, rather than doing 6 or 7 things a day, they only want 3 or 4 pieces a week. But it's, you know, rather than spending an hour on it, it's spending a whole day, sometimes 2 or 3 days on it, going away, speaking to 5, 6, 7 people, whatever you need to try and produce the best thing you can, and being given the time and opportunity to do that. So, yeah, it's been quite a big change, but I'm really, really enjoying it. Yeah, no regrets.
And we can't wait, because this will benefit Hotel Tea as well, because you will bring your...
I might not be late for the quiz from now on.
No, you can't be late for our Hotel Tea quizzes. But you will bring a little recorder when you interview interesting characters, yep, within the club. So we'll go behind the scenes and hear some few clippings, and we'll hear one in a little minute from the last game against Burnley. You spoke to the captain, Jordan Henderson, so we'll hear that in a little while. But... let's talk about the season so far, guys. We're the only team who hasn't dropped points after 4 rounds. 100%. That's good attitude, isn't it, David?
Yeah, I think so. I think after the pre-season that we had, there was a little nervousness, I think, about how the season would start. Difficult for Jürgen to get, you know, his best 11 on the pitch, and at what point would that happen? So he had to really juggle a few things around, and to get everybody off on a positive vein, I think was really important to get the fans up to speed and confident about the coming season. I think it's been a great juggling act, and that we've had the wins that we have had, I think really now. I think most people feel the only way is up, I think we're in line for a really good season.
Because when we saw the first half in particular in the Charity Shield against Manchester City, Liverpool looked a bit flat, didn't they? They looked a bit sort of out of breath and a bit sort of, I don't know, but maybe it wasn't the big important game to win, but still, that looked like a little worry. That first half was a bit shaky.
First half, definitely, but then to completely contradict with that, I think the second half, we absolutely played them off the park, you know, and it made me think, all right, we haven't come away with the shield or whatever you call it, trophy, but we've more than held our own there. We've caused them a lot of problems. I think we give Man City that day more to think about than what they give us.
Mm.
You know, and touching back to the first four games, I mean, I think the fact that we never kept a clean sheet in the first three, it wasn't worrying, but it was more annoying because the performances were good and it's overshadowed by a stupid lapse of concentration. And I think Jürgen was really, really, really annoyed in the Arsenal game when we give away that goal at the end. It wasn't going to make any effect on the points or the results, but Burnley especially, I think that was a, you know, in years gone by, you look at these sorts of games as a Liverpool fan, particularly a Tottenham fan, and you think, you know, is this going to be the one where we pull a Liverpool and, you know, drop points? But I think, and I'm quite confident saying this now, that we're not that team anymore. I think that mentality is definitely out of this group of players. I think we've started just exactly how every player in that squad and the manager would have expected us to start.
I think the rivalry with City is so great now, it's so intense, that any points dropped at the beginning of the season are bound to be crucial. So the fact that the pre-season was a little bit sort of indifferent, I think there was a little bit of a nervousness about, you know, how we were going to handle it the first few games. Granted, we had a reasonable start. You know, having a home fixture is always a good thing to have, I would say. But I think that's gone now. I think the strength of the performances since have been really, really good. You know, we've scored goals. The defence, again, now shows signs of getting back to something like it was last year. So we're absolutely, it's a big loss. Alisson being out. I mean, not to be too unkind against Adrian, but I mean, Alisson is such a huge figure, and his presence is massive. So he can't get back quick enough. For most people's thoughts.
You can tell that, you know, with the defence as well. You know, just see how few times Virgil actually passes the ball back to Adrian. To start the next attack. He rather just started himself. It seems like they don't really fully trust him.
Yeah, you can see that there's a little bit of uncertainty there, but, you know, Alisson's the best goalkeeper in the world, in my opinion. You're going to miss him if he's not in the team, aren't you? And it is going to keep cause that.
I think when you look in the penalty area and you see him there, the ball doesn't actually have to be down the Liverpool end, but you're just looking at him, he's just a huge figure. And I think, well, since Reina, I think he was the last goalkeeper who really had presence for Liverpool. There was a spell in Reina's career at Liverpool when he looked unbeatable and you were so reassured that he was there, his presence, you know, the way he dictated things in the penalty area. We're back to that with Alisson, and I would agree, you know, he appears to be the best goalkeeper in the world now, and he's a huge, it's a loss for us at the moment.
Yeah, and while we're saying that this is a loss for us, we're still playing so well and getting results that we need. I think it's, you know, I think last year in the league, you know, we haven't seen a league run like that, you know, for a long time at Liverpool, that sort of point tally. And if you were to ask me at the start, it's definitely in the middle of pre-season, I'd have said, no, I don't think we're going to. I think that was a one-off in terms of the points tally and the amount of wins we did get and the times we didn't get beat. But having seen the way we've started this season, I think we might, obviously things can change drastically in football, but based off what we've seen, I think we can expect a very similar campaign to last year.
I think probably maybe this season City and Liverpool will be even stronger, because I think the other top teams, James, don't they look a bit vulnerable, especially defensively? They're all dropping points, aren't they?
Yeah, I think what was there, probably 25 points between second and third last season, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, it might not be quite as great as that, but it's going to be another gulf because Liverpool and City are so far ahead of the rest. I mean, people were talking in the summer, obviously United had spent a lot of money, brought in Maguire. Question, you know, how much is that going to improve them? Well, I think we've seen already the answer is not massively, and certainly not anywhere near enough to trouble the top two, you know, Tottenham, I think they're one of those teams who are capable of beating anyone on their day, but they're not serious title contenders. Same goes for Arsenal. We saw that at Anfield recently, and Chelsea are an absolute mile away with, you know, the complete shift there with, you know, the transfer ban they've got, and, you know, a young manager playing young players. So yeah, it's, you know, you can see already that it's a two-horse race, and I've been pleasantly surprised because, you know, like the guy said, pre-season was far from straightforward for Klopp, and you could tell in America that he wasn't particularly happy with what he was seeing. And I think, you know, for someone who's so meticulous with his preparations, you know, it is hard when, you know, players are coming back at all different times, and, you know, you think, you know, he didn't have, you know, Salah, Mane, Firmino for a big chunk of the pre-season, and, you know, the amount of football they've played, and you think, well, what kind of shape are they going to come back in? Haven't really had a, you know, a proper break. Then you lose your goalie in the first game of the Premier League season, and all the upheaval that causes. So to come through the games like they have done so far has been massively impressive, and I think they've grown in stature with each game as well. I think, you know, you looked at those first two away games at Southampton and Burnley and thought both of those are tricky, but, you know, rode their luck a little bit at Southampton. But Burnley, you know, I was amazed how easy Liverpool made that look at Turf Moor on Saturday, because, you know, Klopp said on Friday at Melwood, was at his press conference, and he said, you know, nobody wins, you know, a canter at Burnley. You know, you do not. It just doesn't happen. But it did happen on Saturday, because...
And Burnley is actually one of the few teams who have scored against us every time for the last few rounds.
Yeah, but they're really difficult to play against, aren't they? Yeah,
especially at home.
Yeah, they try and, you know, they hit it long, they play for the second balls, they try and rough you up, they're physical, they try and get in your faces, but... And there was a time when Liverpool would get bullied, but it doesn't happen anymore. No. You know, they think the... I was doing a piece last week, actually, on the, you know, obviously... the comparison to the last Liverpool title winning team in 1990, and a few members of that team said that one of the parallels they see between this team that are trying to end that long drought and the one that they were part of was that ability to win in different ways. And, you know, if you want to have a scrap, then okay, we'll have a physical scrap and we'll grind it out, and if you want to play us at football, we'll play you at football and play you off the park. So it's that's been one of the massive developments under Klopp. You know, the backbone and the spine of this team now is so strong that whatever the challenge they're faced with, they're able to find a way to overcome it.
I think that is the thing that, you know, very much something that's been missed through a few managers. That they had this way of playing, and Liverpool were quite predictable. I think under Klopp, it has emerged now that we are a team capable of winning in different ways. Going back to Champions League final with Tottenham, that was a different style of winning, you know, not having as much possession as we would normally have, but yet still coming out and winning. At the end of the day, it's how you win. Granted, we do want to see attractive, exciting football most of the time, but it isn't always going to be possible. And we have shown that there is there's more facets now to this team. And a couple of years ago, I think you could have looked at Liverpool and thought, well, who's the boss in this team? Who's the leader? You know, whereas there a Souness or a Hughes or whoever you claw back from the years gone by, there's a few of them now on the team. Yeah. I think few physical people and a few exceptionally talented players. We're not reliant on one as such. So the how this team's evolving now is really, really encouraging. And I think the win at Burnley did show that. I'd say when I saw the Burnley team at the weekend and I looked at the team sheet, and I thought there's something missing about this current Burnley. I don't think it's the Burnley of a year or two ago, no. Actually. And although Burnley has always been a difficult place to go to, I didn't really have the same fear this time around.
But talking about leaders, though, you had a word with Jordan after the game.
Yeah, he was, you know, obviously, as you'd imagine, in good spirits after another win. A lot of the conversation centred on Roberto Firmino, and obviously a big day for him, becoming the first Brazilian player to score 50 goals in the Premier League. I thought he was sensational again. I think there isn't a more complete centre forward, I don't think, in European football in terms of the influence he has on the team. You know, he's not
such a cogwheel, isn't
he? He's such a, you know, he kind of epitomises the kind of the unselfish nature that Klopp you know, instills in his players, and how it, you know, the team always has to come first, because, you know, if you judged him purely on goals, you'd look at it and go, well, hang on a minute, why are you talking about him as being an elite band of centre forwards? But he's the vital cog in the machine, isn't he? I think Klopp, I remember one Klopp interview last season where he described him as the engine, and when he doesn't play, Liverpool just aren't the same team. It was another big performance from him, and obviously Henderson was also asked about the spat that went on when Sadio Mane came off late on. Fair to say Mane was less than impressed with Mo Salah's decision not to pass to him a few seconds before that, but Jordan made it clear that he said, you know, it was a non-issue, and that they'd been laughing and joking in the dressing room about it, and there's certainly no feud there between the two of them. I think Henderson actually said that he actually quite liked Mane's reaction, because, you know, it shows that they're driving each other on, and that when one of them they feel slips below the standards expected, they're not shy to dish out a rollick into each other. And I quite liked it as well. I thought, when you're 3-0 up away from home, to see someone caring that much, I think it just epitomises the winning mentality. They don't settle, they always want more. And if one of them slips below that, they're not afraid to tell their mate what they think of them.
Yeah, I think that also goes back to what David said about there being, you know, where we've always had one big player in the team. Now, years gone by, Steven Gerrard does that. I don't think anyone on the pitch tells him, you know, that he's done wrong.
Be a brave man who did.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe Carragher would be the only one who you'd think, and even then, probably not. Now, within that front three, like, I personally, I couldn't pick, you know, I couldn't pick who I'd want to leave out. Like, so I think they are pushing each other along, because it's refreshing that Mo Salah's this player, this world-winning player who's come into the league and set the Premier League alight, and he's breaking record after record, scoring goals here, there and everywhere. The fact that his fellow, someone in the front line, can say to him, hang on a minute, you're not pulling your weight here, that was, you know, all right, maybe he shouldn't have made such a scene in front of the cameras or whatever, because people go on about professionalism these days. But you know what? It's in the heat of the moment. And, like, I know when I used to play football, I used to lose my head and I've had enough full-blown fist fights with my mates on the pitch. But once the game's over and done with, it's in the past, isn't it?
I think that's something that's always been there for many years. Certainly the teams I played in. I mean, you didn't pass to, you make the right choice of pass, then, you know, you were in for a rollicking. You knew that. The players policed the team. And I think that's what Jürgen kind of intimated towards at the weekend, that it's between the players. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to come in and settle things like a schoolmaster of thing. It's up to the players. I think it is good to see. I think there'd be very few people who would say it's something that I wouldn't like to see. I think it is a healthy. It shows a maturity that exists. I think.
Yeah. I think that there's a hunger there. I mean, they shared the golden boot last year. By Mane scoring in the last game, didn't he?
Yeah.
And my favourite story, actually, from your time was back in the days, was when we go back to Paris in 81. Alan Kennedy always tells this story, you know, where he's just rushing down the line and then he just ends up scoring the winner against Real Madrid in the European Cup final, and David Johnston walks angrily over to me and said, "You greedy bastard, you should have passed to me."
That's right, yeah. And as Alan said, he said, "David, if I passed to you, we'd still be playing." And he's probably not far wrong, actually. But Alan was never a thinker, so Alan just did the first thing that popped into his head, and obviously, you know, seeing the goal there, I mean, what a fantastic opportunity, it's made him the legend that he is, Alan. I mean, he shouldn't have been where he was. Well, he was rarely ever where he should have been. But
this is just a little quick podcast about where we are now. Just a quick round at the end today on the draw in Champions League. We were pretty lucky, I guess we can say that.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been unlucky in the past. You know, last year was a tough group, wasn't it? You know, PSG and Napoli in the same group, two giants of European football. I think it's about time. But, you know, we've never really done it the easy way in Europe, have we? We've never really had it given to us the easy way, I don't think. So you know what, I think it's about time. And if it means that we're getting through to the knockout stages after game four, that means we can, you know, put more concentration into the league. I just think, yeah, perfect, let's go and do it, get the job done professionally. By match day four, then two games against Genk back to back, I think that's really, really crucial for us, because 6 points there, you know,
yeah.
You're talking as literally 6 points there. By then we should really be, you know, it's Liverpool and it is what it is, but we should be through by then, and then maybe for the next couple of games give a few younger players a bit of experience in it, because we're through, you know, there's no reason why not. And, you know, hammer on the league, and then it's tougher around that time leading up to Christmas in the league, isn't it? So
well, I heard somebody say that it'll be Liverpool have got a tough group, because you got two champions of their country, Salzburg and Genk. Now, it's not to be unkind to those, but no. At the end of the day, if a side like Liverpool and you know, City and Liverpool, probably the two best teams in Europe at the moment, if Liverpool aren't strong enough to be the champions of Austria and Belgium, then we're not really in the level that people are placing us. So I think it's a good group, definitely. Yeah. Looking forward to the Belgian game, hoping to be in Genk.
Yeah,
I played in Belgium for 3 years, so that'll be a nice nice opportunity to go back and see some friends who aren't too far away from there. So looking forward to the group. I think it's an interesting group, as you said, Jamie, before now. We've had difficult ones and we've had some unattractive places to visit. I mean, Naples probably isn't attractive to visit. I don't think there'll be many going back to Naples.
The hotel needs extra security,
So Naples is a troublesome one. The pot two was always going to be, there was always going to be a lot of difficult games potentially. So in that sense, you know, is Naples a good one or a bad one? At least we know them. But Salzburg is a beautiful place, and there'll be no shortage of people itching to go to Salzburg. It's all things being, from my point of view, it's a good group.
Yeah, it's a great draw. It could have been a lot worse, couldn't it? When you think it could have been, you know, you could have had Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan, and Leipzig. I think when you look at it in terms of what the worst case scenario was. So yeah, you can't complain about getting Salzburg and Genk. I think, you know, neither of those have been anywhere near the group stages for a long, long time. You know, similar to Red Star Belgrade last year, I suppose you've got to be respectful of them, because, you know, they will lift it, because it'll be massive for them having the European champions in town. But, you know, there should be, you know, a big gulf in class there, and, you know, I'm sure Mane and Keita will be able to help Klopp out with his knowledge on Salzburg, with them going back to their old club, and, you know, Origi started his career at Genk. Yeah, I was a bit gutted when Napoli came out, I've got to be honest, just because it was horrible there last season. Absolutely horrible. You know, like,
just hostile, isn't it?
Even doing the press conference the night before the game, we walked up the ramp out of the stadium, and the stewards told us, it's not safe, you must, you know, we had to go back in, because there was gangs of kids with weapons and stuff outside. That was 24 hours before the game.
Hopefully there's nobody from the Naples tourist board listening, but it's not going to be on our hit list, I think.
No.
Even walking around Naples as a city, it's not the most pleasant place to be.
We had a close list, to be fair, which sort of a few pulled up on scooters by us when we were going to our apartments, and luckily those five more of us waiting in the apartment. We come down to open the door, and when the lads realised that there was about 8 or 9 of us there, they didn't want to know then, because that's just how the Italians work, isn't it?
But it's pretty setting, unfortunately. The Bay of Naples is a gorgeous place, but Naples is a place, no.
It's just overrun by mafia, isn't it? You know what I mean?
It's a hostile environment.
Yeah, and the stadium's horrible as well. Yeah. It's a real crumbling
unsafe.
I don't know how they're allowed to play Champions League games there, because they have to get special dispensation each season from UEFA, because it doesn't fit all of the requirements there should be. So yeah, that's not great. And there'll be two genuinely tough games, because even on the pitch, they've spent a lot of money this summer. Ancelotti, I think, spent over £110 million on new talent. So they will be tough, but, you know, it's essentially those two games will be to determine who finishes first and second, because there'll be too much between Liverpool and Napoli and the other two.
I think for first game round, you know, it's the first game up, so it's not a bad, that's not a bad outcome, I think, to have get that one out the way.
But what's the chances, though, lads, that we will get to the Champions League final 3 years in a row? I mean, Istanbul is always doing it for us. We not know what happens if we get to Istanbul and we get to a penalty shootout. We know that. But how do we get there? Okay, is that possible, 3 years consecutively?
Well, listen, Jürgen Klopp, I don't fancy any manager in Europe at the minute to beat him over two legs of football, personally, just off what I've seen him do with us and what he done with Dortmund as well. He got to the final with them. He's, I think in one game, yeah, you can lose, but over two ties against the European team. If we pick up British teams in the knockouts, that's when it can get tricky, but I think if we stay against the European teams, two legs, Jürgen Klopp, front three fit. And well, there's no reason why we can't. We're not any worse of a team than last year, are we? And I don't think there's too many who are better than you are.
I think we're getting back to the status whereby Liverpool is the most feared team in Europe. Yeah. And, you know, our results over the last couple of years have shown how strong we are, particularly at home. And as you say, Jamie, over two legs, beat anybody.
Yeah. Finally, we're going to have a little listen to our captain, Jordan Henderson. Here he is.
Roberto, first Brazilian player to get 50 Premier League goals. How would you sum up his importance to this team and the impact he's had in the Premier League?
Yeah, massive, massive fear for us, as many people will know, I'm sure. Extraordinary what he does for the team, you know, defensively, goals, assists, everything, he's linked up player. Yeah, what a player he is, and he's on fire at the minute as well, so hopefully that can keep going. I'm not surprised he's the first to 50, and hopefully there's many more to come from him.
And James, if we want to read the full story, what do we do to follow your long pieces where you get to dwell in depth and spend a day or even two on these beautiful pieces on Liverpool Football Club?
You just go to theathletic.com.
Fantastic. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the very second Hotel Tia podcast ever. Please tell all your friends. We are here to stay. We want loads and loads and loads of listeners because that makes it even more fun to gather around a few crystal glasses and some pastry. We can't wait to meet again. Thank you so much, David Fairclough, James Pierce, and Jamie Webster. And this is me, Ragnhild Nansnes, co-owner of Hotel Tia.